Coming up on what was an early morning edition of the Next Fan Up podcast.
Been jittery at best, anemic at worst.
It makes you feel a bit grubby, doesn't it? And a bit like you need to go and have a shower as soon as possible.
Like, you know, you also need like a bear to dance on a ball.
I don't know what that last thing has to do with waking up early in the morning, but we do have a full playoff picture recap preview coming up for you right now.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to an unseasonably early morning edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Hello everyone, I'm Pod Vader. I promised you a recap podcast and gosh darn it, we're going to give you one. Merry Christmas to all. And to all a good night. I've got two super fans here with me today, and we're going to run through sort of a different kind of recap podcast, but we'll get into that in just a second. Let me bring in my guys. First, it is Greg, our Steelers super fan. It's a Merry Christmas for you, Greg.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas, Jay. Merry Christmas, listeners. Just in the woods in Pennsylvania, having fun.
Merry Christmas to James, our Eagles superfan, who actually took the season literally and gave a present to the Dallas Cowboys this week.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to everyone except them. They got early Christmas on Thursday night.
So as we look over a few things, I want to first let you all know you can contact us via email. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. You can always tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, we have a beautiful website that Greg maintains for us, and that is nextfanup.wordpress.com. We have a Facebook page too, and we still do a lot of our postings on Facebook, but we're trying to get you all to go to the website now, nextfanup.wordpress.com. Few things to note here. Eliminator Challenge, everyone but one has been eliminated, thanks to James' stupid belief in those Cleveland Browns.
Indeed, and I like to say thank you to everyone last week who laughed at me and groaned and didn't want to talk about Cleveland, San Diego, but I told you this is the game they were going to win. So, you're welcome.
But you've been saying this is the game they're going to win, like, all season long. You know, you can't credit.
No, because I was saying that you should lock against them. Well, you were adamant about locking them up as the loser every single week, which was sound advice. But as the season waned on and things started falling into place and Griffin came back 2 weeks ago, those first two games he played were kind of more like his preseason reacclimation to getting used to the team. And after having those two games on his belt and the way the Chargers are basically a walking ICU unit, it just stood to figure that they'd be at home, crowd behind them, last home game of the season, Griffin's third game back. And he looked great while he was playing until he got knocked out with a concussion. San Diego just basically gave them the game. I'm not going to, you know, sugarcoat anything. They played horribly. They couldn't run. They couldn't catch. They couldn't sustain drives. Defensively, when it counted most, they couldn't get off the field on third down. I'd also like to point out that in the eliminator group, I believe it was 47 to 48% of the people picking this week picked San Diego as their lock.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's because Cleveland sucks. And thank God the Rams suck just enough that the 49ers could win so that Cleveland could keep that first pick. Although you're probably right, it probably would have done the Browns just as good if San Francisco had continued to lose and thus would have taken over the number one pick in the draft. Would have gone to show that they should not have gone out to win that game. You know, looking at the pigskin pick'em, where I once again had a fantastic week with 10 picks correct. And now catching up to the leader, that now being Dizio, who has 156 correct. Dizio 69 now in the lead. Justin has fallen out as he only had 9 correct picks. I'm now in a three-way tie for fourth with Marty 1 and Montsadius, our Raiders superfan, who I don't know if he's
crying or if he's happy or what's going on with Monty, but Raiders fans today not very thrilled. And lo and behold, look who has been able to join us now. It is our good friend from across the pond, Neil, our Washington Redskins superfan. Hello, Neil.
Morning, guys. There's only one thing to say, I think, this morning. All hail James. All hail James. All hail James.
You're welcome.
So that's our Pigskin Pick'em group. And by the way, as I was looking at my picks this past week, I don't know who I would have locked in. I guess the Redskins would have been my next best choice for a lock of the week. But I mean, could I really lock in the Redskins this week, Neil?
Oh, no, never do that, James. Never do that. That's the road to ruin.
And we're playing Chicago.
Well, yeah, well.
Huh. With Matt Barkley starting.
In any case, there's still one more game tonight, and that game does have playoff implications, which is quite odd. Let's talk a little bit about Dallas and Detroit. As right now, Dallas is one of the few teams that are locked in no matter what. No matter what happens, Dallas is the number one seed in the NFC playoffs. They can lose out, and they remain the number one seed in the NFC playoffs. However, Detroit has got some has a whole different path. Detroit winning tonight would be enormous for the NFC playoff picture, because that pretty much would seal the fate of your Washington Redskins, Neil. However, if the Lions lose, I'm sorry, that doesn't seal the fate. Even if Detroit wins tonight, doesn't seal the fate for the Redskins. Does the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are out of it. Redskins still have slight playoff hopes, but they need the Lions to win out for the Redskins to get in, I think. Is that true?
Yes. They need to win out, and Washington needs to win next week against New York.
Thank you. So confusing.
And they have to win out against Green Bay, don't they? Which is probably not the best game you want for Washington fans.
Well, probably the game is in Detroit, so that bodes well for the Lions. But it's Green Bay, like you said.
And it will be the last game of the day. So, of course, it got flexed to Sunday night.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Washington's game has been flexed to 4:25 as well, Sunday.
It would appear so.
Yes. Yes, it has. A lot of the scheduling quirks finally came out and were official yesterday as far as who was flexed to where. But, yeah, it was evident when Detroit, Green Bay was up early on Minnesota Saturday that their game against Detroit was going to be flexed on a Sunday night, because it only made sense. It's the only game with a division title on the line, which is typically what the NFL likes to do at the end of the season anyway. Any game that pretty much decides the division title between two teams always gets flexed on a Sunday night.
So can we take what we've learned this week and apply it to tonight? Do we think that Detroit might actually win tonight's game? I know on Thursday, I think most of us ended up taking Dallas to win tonight. I know I took Dallas to win, but not cover. So now I'm feeling really good about the Detroit Lions, maybe even pulling off a victory here in tonight's game. What do you say about that, Greg?
I think that's a real possibility. I think that's the right call to have the Cowboys win the game but not cover. Because, everything's all, Dak Prescott now is all solved because he threw for over 150 yards for 1 week now. But I just don't buy it. The rookie wall, I'm a believer in it. I think it's coming for both those guys. So, and I don't think the Dallas defense is that great. And, heck, with everyone falling, Matthew Stafford has to be the MVP right now, in my opinion. And he's the last man alive. So, if he's MVP, he needs a signature moment. And a win in Dallas in front of everybody on a holiday weekend would be great.
All right. So, James, what are you thinking with the Cowboys?
I think the Cowboys pull this out. Again, they don't cover, but I think they're up enough at some point in the second half to where they rest Dak and Zeke, and you see a lot of Alfred Morris and some guy named Romo. I believe the Cowboys still have.
Where's Kevin on a day like today?
I know. I think that scenario is in play depending on how much Dallas is up by. Again, I don't necessarily see them covering, but this is Detroit, and Matt Stafford hasn't beaten a winning team on the road in like forever, if he's ever done it. I mean, his record is dubious at best. So they don't play well against winning teams on the road. They tend to make the most boneheaded mistakes at the most inopportune times. This type of game that we see bad Stafford, you know, he could throw 40 times and have three picks and one of them could go back for a touchdown, or he could throw for say about 30, 35 times and have over 300 yards. Again, Dallas's defense is not great, but they're not bad. They're an average defense at best that does just enough to keep their offense on the field.
So Neil, where does your heart lie tonight? Does your heart lie with those dreaded Cowboys?
Yeah, it makes you feel a bit grubby, doesn't it? And a bit like you need to go and have a shower as soon as possible after the game. I will be shouting for Dallas tonight to win. I guess my concern, Jay, and it's, I guess it's a concern for many teams at this sort of time of year, is how much are Dallas going to play tonight? Are they going to put out the starters? Are they going to rest guys? And the guys who play, are they really going to be up for it, knowing that they've nothing much really to play for other than pride on national television? And knowing that they could actually pretty much end Washington's playoff hopes, or certainly put a major dent into Washington's playoff hopes, a division rival. So, fingers crossed, Dallas play fair and do the job. I think at home they probably can just edge out the Lions there tonight. But oh gosh, fingers crossed.
And you have to further look into that crystal ball. And again, taking what we've learned from this weekend already and applying it to tonight, you know, the Cowboys saw two starting quarterbacks with playoff hopes and dreams on the line go down late in their football games with broken legs. That being Derek Carr of the Raiders and Marcus Mariota of the Tennessee Titans. And the Titans, I believe, are on their way to a comeback. I'd like to believe that they were on their way to a comeback against the lowly Jacksonville Jaguars when Mariota went down. Interestingly enough, it's almost as if the evil Bill Belichick saw it ahead of time. One of the first times, I think maybe in the history of Tom Brady's career, he was pulled before the fourth quarter even began for Jimmy Garoppolo. I had never seen that before, ever. In the history of Tom Brady getting taken out of a game that was already in hand. And it happened before the Mariota injury happened. So that was a little freaky. The fact that two quarterbacks went down in that fashion, and it was almost as if Belichick knew, oh, something bad is going to happen here. There's a disturbance in the force. So do we think Dak Prescott plays anything in this game? I mean, is there any reason to put Dak Prescott out on the field at all tonight?
Yes. I'm going to say there is, because he has not looked great the last couple of weeks, specifically in their last two games. He's been jittery at best, anemic at worst, and his consistency with targeting his outside wide receivers has been all over the place, even targeting Dez Bryant, who surprisingly has not been as much of a headache as he's been in the past, most likely understanding that, you know, he has a rookie quarterback back there and just being patient with him. But at some point, that patience is going to wear out. You know, former players say all the time, winning cures everything. And the fact that they pretty much have the one seed locked up for the entire conference may be a big factor as to why we haven't heard much of Dez, you know, not getting as many targets and catches on the year. But Dak is not playing his best right now.
Just one thing to add there about the Dallas quarterback situation. It's probably slightly different from the situation Tennessee and the Raiders have, in that Dallas can perfectly well stick out possibly a better quarterback if Prescott gets hurt. So they have some cover there. In case the Belichick curse strikes again.
That is true. They do have another quarterback they can put in. I just wouldn't do it at this point, you know, with the way Dak is playing. Mm-hmm. He needs the reps to get better.
Yeah. So other than Detroit mucking up the picture a little bit, All the other seeds are set. Well, not the seeds. All the other players are set in the NFC. Atlanta currently having the second seed in the NFC. Is that correct? Again,
that
I keep
correct.
Trying to flip through as many different websites here as possible, people, to try and keep this picture as clear as possible. Atlanta currently holds the second seed. However, they could fall out of the second seed in any number of different scenarios. They're only 10-5. Obviously, a win solidifies themselves as the second seed. You know, Atlanta did what they had to do and took out a Carolina Panthers team that I thought was coming on strong here at the end of the season and instead have gone out with a whimper.
That was abysmal. I expected more from Carolina after, and I'm sorry, Neil, what they did to Washington Monday night. You'd figure they just roll with that momentum being at home against a divisional foe with a chance to play spoiler and make Atlanta's life just that much more difficult. And to say they laid down is an understatement. They never showed up. I mean, at one point, Cam Newton was like, what, 3 of 13 for 15 yards, an interception. I mean, their whole offense just took the day off and celebrated Christmas early, but just got lumps of coal in their stockings. I mean, Falcon fans were jumping all over the place on Saturday, and I know a handful who went to the game in Carolina, and I know the fans were not pleased to see them, but that was probably some of the worst football that Carolina could have ever played after what they did on Monday night.
Yeah, Neil, what did you think of Carolina laying over?
Well, I wish they had done it last Monday. or maybe they did and we couldn't do it. It's one of those, RJ, just to go back to the playoff scenario for Washington there. Does it really matter if Washington gets to the playoff? Okay, anything can happen when we get there, but it's just, we're just fighting for the opportunity to get absolutely thrashed in the first round. So I'm not sure if it's a big thing for us there. Carolina destroyed us last week. And if we play Atlanta, which is probably, well, no, who we play at the moment, probably Seattle. It's not looking good. So I'm not sure if I want the playoffs, to be honest.
You could end up playing a whole bunch of teams. You could end up playing the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, the problem is, though, Jay, that whole bunch of teams are all better than us. So,
hey, well, fair enough. Greg, your thoughts on Atlanta, Carolina?
You know, Atlanta did what they did. They've proved everyone wrong all season. That they're, you know, and they didn't fade. That's a good thing. And Carolina, not much to say about. Oh, it'll be interesting to watch Cam Newton on the offseason, see if he's lost that team or what's going on there. If it's just purely a Super Bowl hangover or whatnot.
That's a really good point.
Speaking of a Super Bowl hangover, failed to mention right off the top, there's so many things to discuss with all these different scenarios. Neither Super Bowl team will be in the playoffs this year, which is, you know, something interesting to note.
When did that happen last year?
I don't think that's ever happened. I think there's always been one representative in the playoffs, I should mention. There's always been at least one previous Super Bowl representative in the playoffs.
No?
Okay.
I think this goes back to Ravens-Giants. After their Super Bowl, neither squad made the playoffs.
Yeah, I can think of a handful of times that possibly happened, like after John Elway's second Super Bowl win over the Atlanta Falcons. What was that, 98 or so? I don't think either one of those teams.
That one too. But I think Giants-Ravens is the most recent in which it didn't happen.
And that doesn't seem all that recent, honestly.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
All right.
2001.
All right, here we go. Moving on, because there's so much to cover here today, and we got limited time here, gentlemen. We're not gonna sit around like a San Diego Cleveland game today. Not at all. The Seattle Seahawks, they end up laying a stinker at home of all places. Although I don't know if you could really call it a stinker as much as it was an exciting end to the game. if you ended up watching the end of that Seahawks-Arizona game. But they did end up losing to Arizona. And, you know, when those two teams get together, you can't say that it's not exciting. That's for sure. Anyone see that game?
I did catch the latter half of the fourth quarter. And without Earl Thomas, and at some point during that game, they were missing Cam Chancellor as well. That defense, if a quarterback can get a pass off, kiss the secondary goodbye. I think John Brown had an early touchdown that was over 70 yards in the first half when Chancellor was out, but he came back. But still, if anybody's missing between Chancellor, Thomas, or Sherman, that defense on the back end can easily get torched. And they were all out of sorts on the final drive after Russell Wilson had this phenomenal approach to moving them down the field just to get them the lead, and then for them just to give it up at the end. And, I mean, their defense, the secondary, couldn't stop any wide receiver from getting to the ball. They couldn't stop them from running after the catch. They were barely able to knock a handful of them out of bounds. But this secondary, as a unit, is the heart and soul of this defense. Yeah, they're big names up front in the front seven with Wagner and Bennett, but – this secondary, as they go, this team goes. And when they're playing well, this team shuts up opponents down. With one of them missing, I mean, you can have a field day against the secondary. So, yeah, it was somewhat shocking, but injuries to this team are really showing right now.
All right. Well, Seattle could end up in any number of scenarios. They're going to be locked in. Well, no, they're not locked in as the third seed. There's still a chance they could get the second seed, which is probably what they would want to get that bye week. Let's say, though, I mean, they could end up facing, to me, from the different scenarios I'm seeing, they're going to get a bye or they're going to face Green Bay. Oh, I guess they could face anybody. So, I mean,
Green Bay, Washington,
if it's
Detroit.
Green Bay, Washington, Detroit, or the Giants, which teams or team do you think has the best chance to beat Seattle? Neil.
Green Bay.
Greg says Green Bay. Neil.
Did you say the Giants in there as well, Jay?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say the Giants.
And James.
It toss up between the Giants and Green Bay. They have the passing attack to actually torch that secondary.
Neil, go
Jay,
back.
We are the podcast of accuracy. That is one of our key things, isn't it?
Right.
Just to say that the Giants did make the playoffs as a wild card in 2002 after losing the Super Bowl to the Ravens in 2001.
Okay, my bad.
There you go.
But they missed.
So were you able to find when you were fact checking James if there was another season?
I have to say, sadly, Jay, that during the holiday period, I don't have my secretary who I could ask to do such a thing, but she's not here today. She demands holidays. Can you believe that?
Oh, that's awesome. All right. I agree. I think Green Bay has the best chance of knocking off Seattle. Of course, that game would be in Seattle. And we know Seattle's a different team, but we just saw Arizona go into Seattle and do it. So it's not like it can't be done. Green Bay is definitely on fire.
It was really a really interesting play in that game, which goes back to what James was saying there. I think at some point Cam Chancellor went out of the game. And then so they were out without Thomas and Chancellor at safety. And what did they do? The Cardinals went straight down the middle of the field on a deep pattern. I think it was it to Brown or Nelson? And they got a touchdown straight away. And there you can see how it goes when your two top safeties are out of the game.
Well, and if you have a Jordy Nelson coming to town, that might be something you'd definitely be afraid of. Because Jordy Nelson and is it Adam Thielen? Is that how you say his last name? They put on a show on Saturday. Both of those guys going toe-to-toe with over 200 yards receiving and a couple of touchdowns. But most of the spotlight ended up on Jordy because his team won and Adams didn't. But still, I that was the game that we ended up having to watch here in Connecticut. But, interesting to see. I can't imagine a scenario where Green Bay loses to Detroit this coming weekend.
No, I think Green Bay will win it, but I think we can't forget the Green Bay we saw earlier in the season. And I wonder when they come up against the really good teams, if they will revert back to that rather inconsistent Green Bay team. I mean, let's face it, even Washington absolutely slaughtered them at one point.
I mean, Greg, can you see Green Bay losing here down the stretch?
I mean, you know, it's all about Rodgers, right? So if he does get dinged, yeah, they're out. But, you know, Minnesota has a really good defense. They handle them, handle the defensive line very well. So I don't think protection is a problem for them right now. So unless someone can get pressure on Rodgers, I don't see them faltering until, you know, late in the playoffs. I think that we got a deep run ahead of us. Because I do think that's, like, what, 5 straight now for the Packers? So I think they're rolling.
Mm-hmm. And James, your thoughts on Green Bay?
I think they do run the table. It's against Detroit. Granted, it is in Detroit, and Detroit probably wants to get the bad taste of that Thursday night Hail Mary game, you know, out of the memories from last season. But I saw something interesting yesterday where Minnesota only blitzed Aaron Rodgers, bringing 5 or more, I think something like 5 times in the entire game. And, you know, they're wondering why their secondary is getting picked apart. You send 4 men consistently and you get no pressure on Rodgers. Might as well, you know, put him in a shooting gallery and just show him the targets. So you got to bring pressure. I don't know how you do that, because then you risk, you know, mismatches one-on-one with Nelson or, you know, any number of wide receivers who can possibly beat their, you know, their man in single coverage. So stopping them, I mean, probably the best way is to shut down the running game, but you put the ball in the hands of Rodgers and he can do whatever he wants, it looks like, unless he pulls his hamstring again.
I skipped over the New York Giants, but of course they had played Thursday night, and James, you handed them a beat down on that evening, but they have clinched a wild card, and at 10-5 will most likely end up with that 5th seed. Although all sorts of things can change, and you know, they're not the only 10-5 team or 5 loss team sitting in the NFC playoffs right now. So their seeding is very much in the air as well. What did you see on Thursday night out of the hapless New York Giants?
A frustration, mostly. The Eagles refused to play single high safety except for 1 possession. Defensively, they were intent on keeping 2 safeties back to not let Beckham beat them deep. And that limited the big play from the Giants offense, which is, you know, a big part of what they do. You know, if they can get Beckham one-on-one, single high safety, and have him beat his man, then, you know, it's off to the races. He can get off chunks of 30 to 50 yards of play. The running game, which has been stagnant for the Giants all year, was held in check. I'm not going to say it was shut down, because I do believe they were close to 100 yards rushing on the night. And offensively, there was more consistency in the offense with committing to the run even after it wasn't working. And they put Carson Wentz in good spots to make key throws on 3rd down, which has also been a big problem for the Eagles this year. But I think the biggest key was keeping 2 safeties back for the entire game. Eli Manning wanting to go deep and not having the opportunity, consistent pressure up the middle from Cox and Logan. And, you know, that was pretty much the ballgame right there. You know, there was some slack off in the second half as we didn't score. But, you know, credit to the defense and Schwartz, the coordinator, for, you know, maintaining that game plan all the way through. You know, some coordinators would pretty much change things up out of frustration, but he was determined. You know, they didn't blitz. Like I said, it kept both safeties back, and it limited a lot of what Beckham could do. Even though he did get 11 catches for 150 yards, he didn't have any big plays.
This says that the Giants are locked into the 5th seed. I guess I'll take it as verbatim. You might think that yesterday was Christmas and there weren't a lot of people working yesterday or something, but they now have a chance to rest up players versus your Washington team this week, Neil. I mean, Is that something, obviously it's something you're hoping for. If they weren't, though, how concerned are you with a straight up matchup against the Giants?
Well, we beat the Giants earlier on in the season. I would kind of hope they don't rest Eli Manning. He's not having the greatest of seasons. Yeah, obviously you want to win. If you want to win the game, you want to play their backups. I don't think they will. I think the Giants will come and play hard against Washington. So yeah, am I confident we'll win the game? Yes, I think we probably will win the game. I don't see any reason why not after beating them earlier in the season. I think we're fairly even teams, really. At the end of the day, there's not a lot between the two sides. It'd just be a question of keeping that Beckham fellow in check, which is very difficult to do, of course. But we will try and do that. And I don't see much else from their offense. So defensively, they've slipped up in the last week or two. They didn't look that great against Philadelphia. I thought Philadelphia played very well against them overall. So I don't know if Janoris Jenkins, if he's going to be playing or not for them. Yeah, I think Washington can edge that game, but just like all Washington games, we win these games just by a small margin when we're playing reasonably good teams.
Greg, let's assume the Giants are locked in that fifth spot for now. The most likely scenario I'm seeing is they're going to play the winner of the NFC North. So that'll either be at Detroit or at Green Bay. Do you think this is the end of the Giants' road in the first round?
I do. I think their on offense went way too one-dimensional this year. And Neil said earlier, with this scenario where you're playing Stafford or Rodgers, you're playing on the road. Eli's not playing that great right now. I just don't see how they overcome Eli's turnovers and the lack of a running game to actually advance in the playoffs.
The rest of the teams, they're out of the playoffs, so we're really not going to focus on any of those teams. I do want to mention, though, as we've alluded to already with Cleveland winning and the Niners winning, also the Jacksonville Jaguars won. In a week where so much was on the line for playoff hopes, three of the worst teams in the NFL all came away with victories this weekend, which I guess says a lot. By the way, and before we jump to the AFC, a theme all season long has been this NFL viewership is down. There's a 10% drop in the ratings. However, I see this press release that comes out that mentions that Thursday Night Football, which is now concluded, will finish the fall TV season as primetime's number two show behind only NBC's Sunday Night Football. So if the ratings are down, that just means television viewing is down, ladies and gentlemen. Doesn't mean, oh, NFL's in trouble. Oh, we're losing money. No, you're still the number two show on television with your crappy Thursday product. Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
But it's true.
That it's crappy Thursday product? Yes, that's true.
Yes, that is true.
But it's still our second favorite crappy product, only to Sunday Night Football.
Well, it's true that they're still losing money, though, right? Because if viewership is down, less advertising dollars, it doesn't mean it's football's fault. It just means, conventional TV is no longer king.
All of that is true. But then in the art of negotiation, you just come to the table and you're like, we're the second most watched television program behind the first watched most television program, which happens to be the NFL. And we are the NFL. We still dominate television. Nobody's watching anything but the NFL on TV.
And you throw out the word Yahoo, and then they all fold.
Well, also, Greg, you figure even if advertising dollars are down during the season, don't they make that back with the ad time they sell during the Super Bowl tenfold?
Good point.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know who makes that money. Is the TV network that provides that, or if it's the NFL? I have no idea.
I think they all make money.
Between both, but I don't know what the percentage is. But even still, with the ad times, what was it last year? A 30-second ad was $10 million?
Do you guys must also have an issue with people watching NFL games illegally? And that seems to be becoming more and more prevalent over here. I was thinking more, you know, we have Amazon Prime over here, which you guys got that over there. And I think there's a program there which has broken the record for the most illegal downloads. So they got about 3 million people watching it through Amazon Prime, but about 4.3 million people illegally downloaded it. So I guess you have the same thing with NFL?
I would suppose. I know nothing of it. And I do mean that legitimately. I know nothing of it. But it sounds like I want to find out more about it.
We can watch things on TV. You know, the various media we have nowadays, things are your television's becoming less and less popular. So I would expect the television figures to decrease every year.
I agree with that.
All right, before we do move on to the AFC, was there anything out of the NFC anybody else wanted to bring up? I'll just be fair. No? Good.
Well, too bad the 49ers can't play the Rams every week of the season. They'd be perfect.
Well, they do have two victories, that's for sure. And I did give you a snort as well, which is, you know, apropos on this early Monday morning. Speaking of snorting... the New England Patriots just snorted all over the New York Jets this weekend. That was a lovely, lovely, lovely game. One point that I wanted to share, if you weren't able to watch that game or if you decided to turn it off early because it was just a runaway, the Patriots were actually trying to run out the clock in the first half, do the right thing. As so many people like to say, they actually tried to run out the clock. The Jets call timeout, expecting to get the ball back with about a minute and a half left in the first half. Belichick says, "You idiots," and then converts a first down, calls timeout to stop the clock for the Patriots, and they go down and they score a touchdown before the half ends. Then to further pour salt on the wound, and I don't know who this looks worse on, but the Jets, to avoid a shutout, decide to kick a field goal when the game is clearly not going to end in their favor, and they kicked it merely to avoid the field goal. To me, that sends a worse message to Todd Bowles and the New York Jets than it does to Bill Belichick and the Patriots. And at that point, Brady had been taken out of the game. I almost thought that Belichick was going to throw Brady back into the game to throw for two more touchdowns. and I would have enjoyed every minute of it. But that's not the way that it went. They kicked the field goal. And I think Belichick maybe was thinking that on the sideline going, "I can't believe you just kicked a field goal, you idiot." What is going on with the New York Jets? Anybody have a guess?
Well, clearly not a lot.
They went home early. I don't know.
Do we think Todd Bowles might be in trouble? Is he one of those guys that no one's talking about that, you know, we find out the day the season's over, he's unemployed?
Well, do we know what he was hospitalized for this week?
He said kidney stones.
Oh, ouch. Ooh. Okay. That's not a long-term issue then. So I think Bowles should get another season. But there's rumblings there, Jay, isn't there? I mean, you'll have heard, Sheldon Richardson, not the greatest character in the world. He's sort of arsing about a bit. And then you've got the quarterback situation there. Brandon Marshall, probably not happy with Sheldon Richardson. There's lots of internal stuff there. What happened to Matt Forte? Has he just been a complete bust this season? And there's just issue after issue after issue. There's not one part of that team you think, yeah, there's somewhere I can build, and maybe in that situation you just go for the clean out of the GM and coach, because that is a very, very poor roster across the board.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets, we came into the season thinking the Jets were going to be that second place, or at least I did, thinking the Jets were going to be that second place team in the AFC East. And clearly they are not. They are the fourth place team and strongly the fourth place team in the East.
Yeah, hold on, Jay. Jay, we're going to stop you there. What is that all about? You spend your entire offseason thinking, okay, who's going to finish second to the Patriots? Oh, that's dear, right. what a strife. Must be a hard life you're going there, man.
I got it. I'm telling you, Neil, you took me down for my comments earlier this year about the Patriots and can they cover a double-digit point spread. They finally did, by the way, proving me wrong. This weekend
on Thursday about that,
but you know, honestly, at this point, I look at the entire playoff picture. There's not a single team in the American Football Conference that I'm worried about. So I do see the Patriots representing the AFC. Yeah, you can clear your throat all you want, Greg. We took you down once. We'll take you down again. And I know it wasn't with Big Ben. I know it was without Big Ben, but we have no problems with Big Ben up in Foxborough. The NFC side, I'm really looking. I look at Seattle as a team that came and punched us in the mouth. So I do have a little bit concerned about Seattle, but Seattle's not that same team and haven't been really all season. And then I'm looking at that storyline in Dallas because I remember about 15 years ago. There was a situation where a veteran quarterback ended up losing his job due to injury to some young rising star. And that team had to face the best team in the NFL at that particular point. I guess they were known as the greatest show on turf. And then they went into that Super Bowl and that plucky team out of nowhere went on to form the greatest dynasty of all time. And yeah, again, I'm looking at your rings, Greg, and I spit in your direction.
Come on, Jay. Come on, Jay. You need Jay.
Really, Jay? First of all,
Neil started it. It's all Neil's fault. I was Neil wanted me to go there, so I've gone there.
13 seconds left on the clock after that field goal. That game wasn't officially over at the time.
Was it something I said, Jay?
Can we just move on to beating down Rex Ryan for a few minutes? That's what I'm interested in.
I honestly don't see that. That's why I was trying to avoid the whole Patriot conversation. Well, I don't see a team to beat them. I really don't. I know there's a lot of talk about the Steelers. The Steelers look great, but I mean, what's your defense been like, Greg?
But Jay, these quarterback injuries, they always come in threes.
Whoa.
I can't believe you're throwing shade. You know what, though? We won a couple of games with our two other quarterbacks. So I'm not that concerned. Greg, I do legitimately want to ask you about your defense, though, in Pittsburgh. How has it been here down the stretch?
It's been really good, actually. We have our three young draft picks that are playing a lot and playing well, and they've really reshaped the defense over the last three drafts. Shazier, you know, even though he didn't make the Pro Bowl, he's a rising star in the league. I mean, he's missed too many games this year, but he's healthy now. He makes impact plays. Lawrence Timmons has found his young legs again. Our inside linebackers are great. If we could just keep our defensive line healthy, I think we seriously have one of the better defenses in the league right now. I mean, our back end's really tough. Artie Burns isn't playing like he's got a skirt anymore. I mean, it's been really fun to watch. So I am worried about Stephon Tuitt. He's been dealing with injuries off and on. But when he's on the field, he's been great. I mean, he's a one-man wrecking ball by himself. So I mean, persevered over injuries.
It did take an end-of-game drive for you to win against the Baltimore Ravens last night.
Yeah, because our quarterback decided to throw two picks that gave the ball inside the 20. So, you know, bend don't break, and that's pretty much what they did.
Greg, can I ask you one thing? And I'm not trying to, like, nitpick here, but this is probably the third game I've watched of Pittsburgh in its entirety. Obviously, the first one being against Philadelphia, the second being against Dallas, and last night. Are you not the least bit worried about the rushing aspect of your defense, giving up big plays in a running game consistently?
You cherry-picked the two games where the defense was still figuring it out with Philadelphia and Dallas. Since the Dallas game has really been the change of philosophy and where they've been playing the younger guys more and more, where they've been rotating more on the defensive line. And the defense has been much better against the run since that Dallas game. So that was like the turning point of the season, was that Dallas game. The defensive coordinator took the gloves off and started coming after the quarterback,
started challenging guys in front of the individual matchups. And that was the real turning point of the season for them. So since then, they've been really well, really good. And even last night, I didn't think the defense's the rushing attack for Baltimore was overwhelming or anything. It looked fine, and that was without Tuitt. So Tuitt was questionable heading into the week, and if he comes back for the playoff run and stays healthy, I don't see where our defense has a glaring weakness. So I'm not saying they're the best defense in the league. They're just they're young, they've been improving, and they're fun to watch right now.
Failed to mention, because Neil got me sidetracked, that none of the seeding is set. All six teams are set for the AFC playoffs, but the seeding is not. The Raiders is the key team to watch, as the Raiders could be as high as the number one seed and as low as the number five seed by the time week 17 comes to an end. The Raiders, although they ended up winning against Indianapolis, end up losing Derek Carr to a broken fibula, which is just a shame. Matt McGloin takes over. McGloin has experience in the league as a starter. But I mean, it's not ideal here for Oakland, whom I do believe will ultimately end up being the number two seed. So they will get a week off. So he'll get a little bit more time to work with the current Oakland Raiders team, you know, in practice. But we're talking about practice? I guess we have to talk about practice. I mean, what do you think of the Raiders' chances now, Neil?
Raiders' chances are over, Jay. If there's one team that's been reliant on the outstanding play of their quarterback, it's been the Raiders. Okay, I mean, the defense has struggled throughout the season. They've probably improved over the last few weeks. I've been watching the Raiders, and you see all the big plays at the key moments made not by the defense or by a running attack, but by Carr there. It's terrible, terrible, terrible for the league, terrible for our guy Monty, terrible for all the Raiders fans. It's just a very sad situation. I think Nick raised a question on Slack about whether there'd be rule changes coming in because of these two serious injuries to quarterbacks. I don't think so. I mean, where do you draw the line with rule changes? We also saw Seattle wide receiver, I think it was Lockett, who had an equally, possibly even worse injury than the two quarterbacks. And these things happen. It's part of the game. It's terrible, but it sadly ruins the Raiders' chances, I think, in the Super Bowl. McGloin's okay, but I don't see him putting in the clutch plays that that Derek Carr put in. So sad day for the Raiders, and I think an easier path for those fabulous Pittsburgh Steelers to make the Super Bowl.
I don't think Greg wants to hear you saying that. James, no. Your thoughts here on the Oakland Raiders?
Devastating injury. I also believe that with the way the schedule is set up, both AFC West games next week are at 4:25. Chiefs at San Diego, Raiders at Denver. And with no Derek Carr and what the Chiefs did to the Raiders last night, I mean, did to the Broncos last night, excuse me, the Broncos are going to be salivating for some retribution and making the Raiders' playoff chances even more dubious by locking them into that fifth spot, not the two spot, and virtually gift-wrapping the division to the Chiefs, who basically pulled out every trick play in the book last night against the Broncos. So I don't like the Raiders' chances without Derek Carr. I don't like them locking in the two seed. I mean, yes, their playoff spot is locked. Their positioning is not. And they will ultimately be the two seed. I don't see how they beat Denver in Denver next week without David Carr.
That's interesting. I have a different view of the Denver Broncos, and my view is a team that's infighting way too much, and it's showing. It's showing quite a bit, and I think it was our good buddy Ross Tucker who put out this tweet: "Who's the defense going to fight against this week?" you know, that game is clearly on the Denver defense. I think Denver's done. I think they've rolled over. I think they are. I think they really don't care. And Yeah, you could say that they're going to be salivating and going to want to prove something and go out with pride. I don't think that's the Denver Broncos. I think we're watching two different Denver Bronco teams. I don't think they have any pride left, and I think they're ready to go and hit the golf courses.
But season finale at home against a division opponent, they have to do something, Jay. Yes, infighting in the locker room, and that could be just the defense mad at the offense more so than infighting amongst the defense. I mean, the offense has been anemic all year. You basically have a Hall of Fame quarterback retire, and your number one plan as his replacement decides to take more money to go to Houston where he gets benched. And you've got to go with plan D basically because plan C to start somebody else didn't pan out in the offseason workouts and preseason. So you stick with the 7-round draft choice from the year before who you basically had no intentions on starting at all. And I give Simeon all the credit in the world. He's played up to his ability so far this season. But with things going on around him with the inconsistent running game and health at running back, not to mention, I don't know who the person is who's been wearing Demaryius Thomas jersey all season, but I don't recognize that guy dropping 5 passes per game. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need to put an APB out for that guy. And I mean, Simeon can only do but so much. He can't throw the ball to himself, and you know the weapons have been inconsistent all season. So I mean, yes, the offense has been anemic, but what's over there? You know, all the star players, you know, the star player retired and the rest of your star players haven't shown up this year consistently except Emmanuel Sanders, who's going to the Pro Bowl. So I mean, you know, I understand the defense's frustration, but frustration at what? This is what you have.
Well, let's stick in the West, because honestly, the West is way better than the next team that we're going to talk about anyway. And the Kansas City Chiefs, as you mentioned, just sort of rolled over those Denver Broncos to the point where they brought out a big fat jelly roll and had him throw a touchdown pass on Dontari Poe. I mean, the Chiefs really embarrassed the Broncos last night.
Yeah, they did. And like I said, every trick play they could find in the playbook, Andy Reid dug deep, and it was pretty much like, what haven't we run this season, and let's run it. Travis Kelce out blocking on the first two touchdown runs by Tyreek Hill and the quarterback Smith, and you know him having a big impact in the game receiving. Again, Hill again still providing big plays like he did the first time when he scored all 3 touchdowns against Denver in that overtime. Just classic game up in Denver earlier this season, and their defense came to play even with missing parts. No Houston last night, no Johnson. I don't think Haley was completely healthy. He played, but I didn't see him much on the field. And, you know, a rookie starting at corner last night, they pretty much did almost whatever they wanted against the Denver Broncos. And yes, while I still believe that the Broncos can win next week, last night, I didn't recognize that team. They couldn't get anything going at all, except for the first turnover that they converted into a touchdown. But that was because it was run back inside the Kansas City 10-yard line. So at that point, you have to score a touchdown. But outside of that, I didn't see much from their offense.
Yeah, you know, Greg, if I'm going to be completely honest here, I'm more concerned about Kansas City in the AFC than the Pittsburgh Steelers, especially if all those names James mentioned that didn't play last night end up coming back in the playoffs.
Well, that's part of my master plan, is to have Kansas City be the 5th seed in the New England the second weekend of the playoffs and knock off Patriots. So I think you're right. I think that's a tough matchup for the Patriots. I think they're a really good team. And, you know, Andy Reid should be on the short list for Coach of the Year. I mean, what he does with that roster every year, he's had injuries he's had to deal with. You know, they lost him. They never really had Jamaal Charles this year. And he gets the most out of his players. You know, it's been really fun to watch them. And they're, you know, they are a dark horse for sure. You know, because I'm going to call them a dark horse because they're probably not going to be the number 2 seed. And, you know, it'll be one of the wild cards that can make a run. They really could be. So, master plan is to have them go in New England, I think.
Let me just look at something here real quick. If the Chiefs were able to somehow pull off being the number 2 seed, Well, Oakland still ends up going to Houston. You still end up hosting Miami. So let's talk about Miami. I know our super fan, Andrew is a believer in Adam Gase. I'm still not a believer. I don't know how Miami got in this position, honestly. But there they are, the sixth seed in the playoffs somehow, some magical way. And it looks like you're probably going to be a lock to host them wild card weekend.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. They embarrassed the Steelers when they were 0-5 down in Miami. And I think that, you know, when the Steelers still trying to figure out their defense, and I'm relishing the opportunity to play them again. I think it'll be a fun game to watch. Well, at this point, Tannehill won't be playing in the game. But going into how they got into the playoffs, can we just take a minute here and rip Rex Ryan? I mean, in that game, I was watching it, some bonus coverage, having a good time. They were in overtime, fun to watch. Your season's on the line for Buffalo. It's a tie does not help you get in the playoffs. They're around the 50-yard line with like a fourth and three, and they punt the ball. That's how Miami got the win. That's how they got in the sixth seed. Is that freaking Rex Ryan handed it to him? Yeah, you know, it's just like I feel that is the fan base I feel worse for. I actually feel worse for them than the Raiders fans. Is that Rex Ryan literally punted their season away? So
how about calling a timeout too late?
What was that all about?
Yeah, that's right too. He said they waited for 20 seconds.
It was almost like he wanted you to think he was calling a timeout, but actually he couldn't be bothered, so he just did it that little bit late. There was something weird there. It was very odd.
Yeah.
Well, the other question I have about the rules, and I wish I had somebody I could call to talk to about these sort of things, is you did see one player on the field literally calling timeout for about 5 seconds before the snap was actually taken. Is that just a matter of there's no referee looking at that particular player on the field, or does he not have the right to call a timeout for his team? Like, no, what the heck was going on there?
It's all about you have to
miss by the ref.
Yeah, you have to make a ref aware of it. They're not there to be watching you to be calling timeout. They're watching they're calling the game for. You've got to get in their face and say timeout.
Hmm. Yeah, to me, it's almost better to like step off sides or something at that point and just be like walk into the field of play and just yo timeout, dude. That said,
but yeah, Neil does have a point because there are, what, seven referees and officials on the field during the regular season. And, I mean, typically when quarterbacks call a timeout because they see something, they literally turn around to the official standing behind the offense to get his attention. Mm-hmm, and right. They're right in his face because, what, every official is watching something different. You know, even when coaches run on the sideline, they're running down towards that referee who's watching the line of scrimmage for a false start and offsides. So, I mean, yeah, the referees aren't particularly looking at, say, individual players, so to speak, to some extent. But, you know, the watching whatever their assignment is for that play, like I said, holding, offsides, pass interference, you know, illegal formation, whatever, they're all in spots to catch stuff pre-snap and then to be able to run with the play post-snap that, you know, no one's really focused on players doing it. Now, more than one player is calling timeout. They have to see that. Mm-hmm. But
true.
If it's only one player, odds are, that seven officials could miss it.
The closer you get.
I disagree with that only because we've played, like, I think it's like 239 games currently through the season, and no one else has had a freaking issue with this, you know?
I'm playing devil's advocate.
The closer you get, the closer you get to the clock running down, the more the referees are focused on their assignment on that particular play, so the less chance they have of seeing somebody stand up and make a sign of a T. So yeah, the question about Rex Ryan, though, Jay, is he definitely gone? Do you think?
Yeah, he has to be. There's been too much talk about it. There's
not punting the ball. He's gone.
There's been too much talk about him being gone that he's got to be gone.
Is he a guy for the booth? Does he ever do booth work over there in the States?
Oh, my God. I can't imagine Rex Ryan in a booth.
No one's ever brought him in for post game or anything or playoff games or anything when the season's over. He's not one of those coaches that networks call in to say, hey, you know, you face this team during a regular season. What's your take on them? He's not that guy.
So if he can't coach in Buffalo and he's not going to go to the booth, clearly he's going to be the Rams' next head coach.
Well done, Neil. That was brilliant. That gets quote of the year right there. Yeah, so Miami is in the playoffs. They're going to be the sixth seed. They're probably going to Pittsburgh. You mentioned maybe without Ryan and Tannehill, they're still holding out hope, but they are winning games with Marty Moore. So be careful what you wish for. You just might get it, Greg. Not saying that Miami is going to Pittsburgh to win. I'm just saying be careful what you wish for.
You have a great running attack with Miami, and I think that's always a real asset when you get into the playoff games.
How great is it, though, Neil? Because, Greg, you pointed out Jay Ajayi, who's over 1,200 yards in the season, half of his yards came in three games.
That's right, and two against Buffalo and one against the Steelers. So 600 yards in three games and 1,200 yards on the season. I mean, up and down for him this year for sure, and it's really contingent on the offensive line. That's another reason I feel good too, is that Mike Pouncey is done for the year. So, you know, they've had a good season. I think Gase has really turned the corner of that franchise. I think they're excited for the future, but they're probably that classic it's a year too early team, just because of the injuries really.
Conversely, you could say that the guys had three 200 yard rushing games, so why not give him a fourth when he gets going against somebody
good.
Perhaps. All right, so we've left the worst team that's still in the playoffs out of this conversation. That's the Houston Texans, the team that I refuse to pronounce the H for, and the team that has benched their superstar mega contract quarterback, and Tom Savage is now behind center of the Houston Texans. I mean, this team is definitely not even one and done. They're done walking in. They're dead man walking into the playoffs.
Yeah,
you're overlooking a future Hall of Famer born in Pittsburgh, went to Pitt, Tom Savage. I mean, come on.
Sorry. Okay.
Did anybody actually watch this game from beginning to end on Saturday night?
No.
Anybody?
No.
Anybody? Okay. So I guess I'm the lame duck who actually was foolish enough to watch this game to see what Tom Savage was about, considering I had never seen him play before. Ever. I just want to point out a few things here. For starters, before the offense took the field, you know, they do the little package on the quarterback, show his stats and everything. Yeah, the broadcast team didn't do that. They showed every college he played for, and there were four schools listed. Four schools.
That's actually
correct. That he suited up, that he actually wore uniforms for. I'm not going to say he actually played for all four schools, but he wore four different college uniforms. So let's start there. Secondly, this was Houston's draft pick, what, last year? And he couldn't play because injury, health, some combination thereof, along with the other 6.5 quarterbacks they started last season. So we all know that Houston has quarterback problems. They can't find one, and when they can find one, they can't keep him healthy. For whatever issues Osweiler had during this season, they could have easily stuck with him last night because Tom Savage either could not or did not want to throw the football. And when he did, it never reached his target. I mean, they bench Osweiler for this guy. And I would love to hear from a Houston fan to get their in-depth insight on what the heck is going on that Denard Hopkins is basically in Siberia right now. This guy made the Pro Bowl, was one of the best wide receivers last year, and you can't find a guy to throw him the football on a consistent basis. And free this man. Please, just free him from Houston. I mean, yes, they have the number one ranked defense. Sure, give them that. But offensively, I feel like this franchise has failed miserably. You figure when Peyton Manning left this division 5 years ago, it was going to be Houston's. They still had Schaub, they had Johnson, they had Foster, and they were going to run roughshod over this division, compete for first-round buys in the playoffs, have shots at Super Bowls, and they just fell off a cliff. I mean, yes, the defense has held with the star power on that side of the ball, but offensively, they have not been able to make anything work in any capacity whatsoever. And Tom Savage is the savior. Tom Savage looked like Ryan Leaf would be an upgrade right now, wherever he is, however old he is. Ryan Leaf would be better than Tom Savage played last night.
Okay. Can I just get a couple of things there, Jay? First of all, I think James just said that he watched the entire game on the same
Yes, I did.
On the same weekend, he chose the Cleveland Browns to win. James, you need to get off this podcast and go and buy as many lottery tickets as you can. The second thing, Jay, I would say, just to nick back to the question about teams who made the Super Bowl but didn't go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
First of all, I got mixed up in the Giants-Ravens one. It was the Ravens who went to the playoffs the following season, not the Giants. But as far as I could tell, it was the game, Super Bowl between the Oakland Raiders and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The following season, the Bucs went 7-9 in third place in the South, and the Raiders went 4-12. My God, what happened to them?
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end for them.
I think that was the year. So there we go. But anyway, there James, you deserve some sort of medal, some sort of award. Next fan up, super fan of the year for winning, for watching that game right the way through and picking the Browns.
Hey, knowledgeable. Sometimes you have to watch the crappy games too.
I wonder if Scotty even watched the whole game there. Our Cincinnati Bengals super fan.
I wonder if anybody else in the world watched the entire game.
James watched the entire game, not James Eagles. Did. James Texans. Yeah. Did he? And are you saying you're the same person, James?
No, we're not the same person.
I'm
pretty sure I could feel his frustration from Saturday night, though. Just watching that game, oh my gosh, it was awful. That game set offenses back at least 50 years.
Hmm. There's a serious point to the Houston Texans going into the playoffs, if they do make the playoffs, and that is, although many
the Texans have made it. They locked in.
They won the division.
Fourth seed no matter what in the AFC. So,
although many teams have had the number one defensive ranking this season, the Houston Texans do have a particularly solid and strong defense, and we know that can take a team a long way in the playoffs, as we saw with the Denver Broncos last season. So, yeah, maybe not as out of it as we think. I might fancy them against the Raiders, you know, if they play the Raiders.
Their first game
and
is
that's
either
a scary thought.
So here's the deal. The Texans will either face the Raiders or the Chiefs. And I believe the Steelers are set to face the Miami Dolphins. And of course, if the I have not actually figured out if the Patriots end up losing, what that ends up doing to the whole mix here. Well, if the Raiders end up losing, then the Patriots are still the first seed. So if the Raiders win, they move to the two, and that still puts the Chiefs against Houston. So there you go.
There was an unlikely scenario that I saw on Twitter today from our former Dolphins fan Ron, that if the Steelers lose and Houston wins and the Chiefs lose, that they get somebody else. Like the Dolphins move and go to play whoever else. But, like, you know, you also need, like, a bear to dance on a ball.
Let's put it this way. I said it. I'll repeat it. They are dead man walking into the playoffs. I don't see much of a future there for the Houston Texans.
Unless things fall and the Raiders end up going to Houston, and then you've got Matt McGloin versus Tom Savage, and that would be great playoff football.
Oh, that's got 4 o'clock on Saturday written all over it.
That was a great season of college football in Pennsylvania. I'll just tell you that.
Real quickly to go through the rest of the teams in the AFC, Greg, the Ravens, they still going to give you guys problems next season?
Oh yeah, I mean, they've turned over the roster pretty well. They need some pass rushers, younger guys. But Flacco, he's been up and down, but he's coming off a major knee injury, so I expected that a little bit. And they're sorting out their weapons. They're a well coached team. They got a good GM. They're gonna be fine. They're gonna be back exactly fighting for exactly the same spot they were last night, fighting for the division again.
The Tennessee Titans, we had mentioned earlier, Marcus Mariota suffered that devastating leg injury. you know, which is a shame. But we all kind of thought that the Titans were that team that were a year early. But I had labeled them as true playoff contenders, thought they would cause some noise, maybe even win a first round matchup. That now can't happen. But Tennessee is definitely a team to watch for next season for sure. The Indianapolis Colts, what do we think about the Colts here? They could finish 500 or they could finish 7-9. Where did I have the Colts in the preseason? I had the Colts at 6-10 in the preseason. What do we think about the Colts? Are they a team on the rise or are they a team still declining?
Well, that all depends on perspective. I mean, this is a glass half full thing or glass half empty. Yes, you still have Andrew Luck, one of the young and up and coming quarterbacks. You still have T.Y. Hilton, arguably one of the league's top wide receivers. But other than that, you have no consistent running attack. You have zero offensive line. You have 11 players who were paid to play defense, but I'm not sure what it is they're doing most Sundays. And that's pretty much it. I like to not think about the Colts, but because Andrew Luck is one of the stars of the league, we're focused on them. And if this team can't stop anybody and everything rests on Luck, who they can't protect most Sundays, I don't know where they go from here because, I mean, it just looks like they keep falling. The scouting department, as far as finding rookies to help and build around Luck or just getting free agents in there to help solidify key areas, is not working out the way they planned. I mean, post-Manning, success early was great, but now as we're heading to, I guess, what you can call long-term, this is not good for them.
Neil, did you have some thoughts there on the Colts?
Yeah, no, I think we say it week in, week out, don't we? They've got to get rid of this coach. They've got to get rid of this general manager. They're wasting the premier quarterback talent in the NFL currently, in Andrew Luck. Every season that goes past is where they don't make the playoffs. And a good deep run in the playoffs, that's a season lost with a great quarterback. Many teams in this league would. What would they do to get Andrew Luck behind center, under center? What have they done for the defense? What have they done for the offensive line? Come on, it's terrible. It's really shocking, and they've got to make changes there.
I say the same thing about the Cincinnati Bengals, but we all still think that Marvin Lewis is going to be the head coach in Cincinnati next year too.
Yeah, but Andy Dalton is no Andrew Luck.
No,
exactly.
That's also true. San Diego Chargers, do we think the coaching staff is in trouble there in San Diego?
No.
They've been in trouble the last 5 weeks. Yes, they're gone. They're gone. And that was one of the things that was constantly being mentioned during the broadcast of their matchup against the Browns, which I also watched in its entirety. McCoy and the rest of the staff are done at season's end. You give them a little bit of a pass to say that they haven't had a healthy roster the last, 3 years with personnel around Phillip Rivers being injured every single week. But these last 5 games, it seems like at least 2 players have been out, if not for the game, for the rest of the year in this current losing stretch they've had. They lost 2 more players on defense on Saturday against Cleveland, and next man up only works, but so far the scheme and what they're doing and the consistency of play on both sides of the ball is erratic at best. And, you know, for all the talent Phillip Rivers has, he's not an elite quarterback. I'd say he's good at, you know, on some days, but overall he's probably average. The numbers and the play reflect that. He is not one of your top tier quarterbacks. He shouldn't even be mentioned in the company, say with even a Tony Romo at this point. He takes too many risks with the ball that always backfires. And with the exception of Saturday's game against Cleveland, the previous 2 games, he cost them on his own by throwing late interceptions when they're driving for the win. So,
Man, for all the clamoring for a team in L.A., now they're going to have 2 horrible teams in the Chargers and the Rams residing in the biggest or second biggest television market in the United States. And the last team here to bring up is Jacksonville. They had sacked, I'll use one of your words, Neil, Gus Bradley last week. The Jaguars end up going out there and winning a game, which to me is just inexplicable. But to me, as the rumors swirl around my offensive coordinator leaving for a job, to me, the job I want is Jacksonville. I think there's talent in Jacksonville that just is underperforming.
If I was McDaniels, I would be taking a very close look at the quarterback situation of any team that was coming after me. He can surely have the pick of teams at the moment. He's probably earned that at this point. And although I wouldn't sack McCoy in San Diego, I would sack the trainers and the medical staff. I do think that they, in terms of talent, McDaniels would make a good choice if he went to San Diego. If they do sack McCoy, that would be good. They've got what, 17 starters or potential starters on injured reserve. They've got a really star in the making in Bosa on defense. They've got a veteran potential Hall of Fame quarterback. They've got plenty of pieces there all across the field. If I was McDaniels, I would go there. Not Jacksonville. It's ugly there in Jacksonville. Yeah, they might have talent, but have they shown they can be a team? Not sure.
All right. One final thought from each of you, and then we are out of here. James.
It's the best time of year. Playoffs. If your team's in, be happy. If your team's out, get ready for the draft.
Greg.
Well, you know, there's this amazing stat on the AFC side where a Manning, Brady, or Roethlisberger has been in the representing them for the Super Bowl since, what, 2000, 2001? And I don't see reason that's going to change this year. So, you know, Brady or Roethlisberger in the Super Bowl.
Neil.
Jay, I just want to hope everybody's had a fantastic Christmas. Have a great holiday period now leading up to the New Year festivities, and I hope all you guys and all the listeners have a fantastic 2017. It's going to be awesome.
There you go. So that will do it for today's show. I believe we'll be trying to do a preview show again later this week where we'll go over our picks. It will be a much shorter show than what we normally do because we're clearly not going to go through the breakdowns of every single game. And it looks like there's really only one game that matters anyway, and that is the Green Bay Packers and the Detroit Lions. Everybody else, I mean, there's some things that could happen that would change the playoff picture, but do we really need to get into the, you know, hootenanny? Do we need to do a real hootenanny for week 17? Not sure we do. We'll present you with another preview podcast a little bit later this week. I won't be doing an interview podcast this week. And then next week, we will have a recap for you after January 1st. So as we enter 2017, we'll get that recap for you. I am working on some things to try and present sort of a special show each and every week of the playoffs that hopefully you will all have a chance to look forward to. And then, of course, we will always present the preview of each and every week. And we will feature as many super fans as we possibly can in those weeks. And I know many of the super fans are already starting to think about the draft, including one who has no business thinking about the draft because his team is going to win the Super Bowl.
Greg, stop it.
I know. I'll try. Slow down.
But wow. That's a little here and there. We want to hear from you. nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can check out everything that we have at our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. So please get in touch with us in some way, because the more you get involved, the more you could be a part of this podcast. And of course, helps us determine what we want to do. And in this season of sharing, please do share our podcast, whether it be on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or AHA Radio. Let your friends know where they can go to listen to our podcast. blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup is another great place you can share the podcast. We love you all. We love all of our listeners. And with that, I say, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.